friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel, and for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, welcome to the Northern Hemisphere's Summer Solstice edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We've got enough material on today's show to get us into the weekend, that's for sure. So the extra daylight today should be a benefit. Everyone is talking about three big stories today. The opening weekend of the African Cup of Nations in Egypt, Thursday night's NBA draft in Brooklyn, New York, and the conclusion of the group stage of the Women's World Cup in France. Let's get things started with our friend Samson Omale, who has this report on the opening weekend of the Cup of Nations and a quick recap of the African teams at the Women's World Cup.
We begin in Cairo, Egypt, where the 2019 African Cup of Nations kicks off later tonight when host Egypt play their opening Group A match against Zimbabwe at the Cairo International Stadium. The Pharaohs, led by Liverpool's Mohamed Salah, are among the favourites to go all the way to the finals in the Egyptian capital on July the 19th. Their opponents in the tournament opener, Zimbabwe, are having a back-to-back appearance at the finals after their early group stage crash in 2017. The Warriors have never gone past the group stage in their previous outings, and they are eager for a good start against the host. Despite their coach Sunday Chizwambwa admitting it will be a tough outing.
I think, as you well know, that you have to be very cautious in these last few days, otherwise you get injuries. But otherwise, I'm quite pleased with what we did.
It will be the first time in the history of the African Cup of Nations that 24 teams will be featured in the competition. The national football team of Kenya, the Harambee Stars, will be returning to the African Cup of Nations after a 15-year absence. The Sebastian McNeese side played two friendly matches, winning one and drawing the other, few days to the competition. Coach McNeese, alongside the team's captain Victor Wanyama, are confident of their team's chances.
It's an opportunity for our players to show their qualities. I'm not sure, under the pressure with this kind of event, what kind of reaction we can have on the field against strong team.
You know, when you win games like this, it gives you confidence going to the next one with the big confidence, and also more is a morale to us players. And it's just important to start this way.
Staying with the 2019 AFCON, the Democratic Republic of Congo gears up for their fourth consecutive participation in the African Cup of Nations with all optimism when they face Uganda in their opening game on Saturday. The DRC is drawn in Group A and will play with the host country Egypt, Uganda and Zimbabwe. Yusuf Mulumbu, their Congo captain, says the Congolese are ready to settle for nothing in the land of the Pharaohs this time around except the trophy.
I'm very confident because, you know, we've been through so much in the groups, in the qualification, and that was good for us because maybe in that was a slap to come back in the basic for us.
In women's football news, Africa has two teams in the knockout stage as final day of group fixtures produce high-tempo games and outcomes on Thursday. Cameroon qualified by playing and winning against New Zealand, but Nigeria only had to look on as Thailand, the whipping girls of the tournament, thwarted Chile in a 2-0 loss. And that's it. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson. Now let's move on to Mugume Davis Rock-Arinj, who has this report on Group A in the African Cup of Nations, including the prospects for the Uganda Cranes and host country Egypt.
Ugandan sports analyst Sharon Sara Adong says the Uganda Cranes have no excuses if they fail to shine at the AFCON finals. She says the 3 weeks training at modern facilities in the United Arab Emirates capital, Abu Dhabi, boosted the team's morale and gave the Cranes enough time to bond.
I am very optimistic because if you look at the preparation Uganda Cranes had, we drew one game and then we won one game against Ivory Coast, or the Elephants, you call them the Elephants. And it's been long to see that Uganda Cranes goes out there and wins against a big African giant team. And that is a key signature, or it is an indicator or a signal that Uganda Cranes is ready to take the mantle. So for me, I will not be surprised for a good result. It's 3 points that will come out of Uganda Cranes' clash with the DRC Congo on Saturday.
Uganda Cranes won by 1-0 against Ivory Coast and drew against Turkmenistan in a build-up for the finals. He says the win will be an impetus for the Cranes when they play against Zimbabwe before ending up with the host Egypt. Leon Senyange, a sports reporter, agrees. Senyange expects tomorrow's game to be an attacking one, as both teams will be looking forward to win their opening game.
There's a chance for the Uganda Cranes to, you know, break the ground and you know, this time round, make it to the second round. So ultimately, the expectations could not quite be high, but I think we could be in for a surprise from the team.
Sports reporter and commentator Darren Cheyune says host Egypt with Liverpool star Mo Salah have a better squad than their opponents in Group A.
I think that in this game against Zimbabwe, Mohamed Salah should fit in well at the right with Marwan Mohsen leading at the front. And of course, you do expect Mahmoud Hassan to come off the left on the offensive for Egypt. And Zimbabwe have been struggling on the other side with their striker, that is Kama Biliat, who is their most renowned name all the way from South Africa at Kaizer Chiefs. And of course, looking at the other second game that involves the Uganda Cranes when they take on the Democratic Republic of Congo on Saturday, I expect the Cranes to try and fight and put up a better show than they did in 2017 in Gabon.
All these analysts agree the AFCON finals will be an exciting one. They expect African stars, most of who play professional soccer in Europe, to shine when they play for their national teams. For the Sony Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thank you, Mugume. Tanzania makes an appearance in the tournament, this time in Group C with Kenya, Algeria, and Senegal. Iron Mike Mbonye caught up with coach Emmanuel Amunuke before Tanzania's opening match Sunday against Senegal. Welcome, Mike.
For us, it's an excitement, and the country is a thing of joy that after a long time, we are back again in one of the best events in terms of football in Africa, which is the AFCON. And like you mentioned, the players were not gone at that time when they were the first time they qualified in the 80s. Even I myself, as a coach, I could say I was also young. Maybe I was then 9 to 10 years. So for us, it's a great privilege. We are preparing. We are aware of the attacks ahead. We are aware of the challenges. We are aware it's not going to be easy. But
maybe,
of course,
like
in
that.
Football, you can never say anything. We are preparing on our own way so that we can be in the best position to compete. We can be in the best position to achieve our objectives, which is trying to win our games and then looking forward to be able to make it to the next round. But we are okay. We are happy that we are here. And hopefully we will be able to be in a position to give our best.
Whom are you playing in your first match and where is your center?
Well, we are in Cairo. We are playing against Senegal in our first game. So we are on Sunday we are playing, which is the 23rd of June. So we are working hard towards to the game.
How was the camping? How did it go, the preparations for this tournament?
Well, our preparation was okay. We prepared here in Egypt. So we came into here on the 8th of June. And since then, we've been in Egypt. We've been preparing. We have been privileged to play two friendly games, one against Egypt, which we lost 1-0, and then the other one against Zimbabwe, which we played 1-1. So we are doing what we're supposed to do, and hopefully the players will be ready to approach the first game against Senegal.
And coach, lastly, do you have any message to the numerous fans of the Taifa Stars back home in Tanzania who are looking up to the team to do the country proud in the 2019 AFCON tournament?
I'm not in the fans' angle. What I'm a coach, and what I'm interested is to see how my players can be ready to play. And the fans, that is their decision. They have to support their team. They should be proud of their team. They should be proud. After many years, they've been watching other countries playing. And so they should be proud of their team that this time around, be privileged to watch their team live, both the stadium, both from the television point of view. So it's up to them to be proud of their team.
Thank you, Mike. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We'll have more on the tournament as it progresses. Now, quick side note, it looked as if there was a chance Zimbabwe was going to sit out the tournament's opener due to a pay dispute with their federation, but that seems to have been resolved. On the other hand, Cameroon's team did not get on the airplane Thursday for its flight to Egypt due to their own pay dispute. Right now, Cameroon is scheduled to play Guinea-Bissau on Tuesday. A report this morning, however, says the team agreed to accept a bonus of just under 8,000 euros per player. Let's stick with the soccer world. As Steve Miller and I discussed on Thursday, the final games of the Women's World Cup group stage were played in France Thursday evening. Up for grabs were the final two spots awarded to the best third-place teams. And as Samson mentioned earlier, Nigeria and Cameroon both got into the knockout round. We also saw the American team handle the Swedes to win Group F. Our friend Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori is here now to get us ready for the knockout stage.
The France 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup enters the first knockout stage, and two African teams are among the 16 qualified. The indomitable Lionesses of Cameroon and the Super Falcons of Nigeria booked their places, while Africa's third force, Banyana Banyana of South Africa, failed to advance. In the first phase knockout, Nigeria will face favorites Germany at Stade des Alpes in Grenoble, while Cameroon will meet another European strong side, England, at Stade du Hainaut in Valenciennes this weekend. The other matches fixed for the weekend are Norway against Australia in Nice, and host France will play Brazil in Le Havre. The rest of the games scheduled for next Monday and Tuesday are Spain versus USA in Reims, Sweden and Canada in Paris, Italy will meet China in Montpellier, and Netherlands will play Japan in Reims. For the Sunny Side of Sports, Kwabena Ofori in Paris, France.
Thank you, Kwabena. We'll have more on the Women's World Cup in just a moment, but let's look at the big story coming out of Brooklyn, New York on Thursday night, and that was the NBA draft. We're joined now by VOA intern Ryan Handel, who has been handling the NBA draft coverage here on the Sunny Side of Sports. Sporty greetings, Ryan.
Sporty greetings, Dan.
So, Ryan, can you give us a rundown of last night's NBA draft and what people's reactions were to some of the draft's biggest surprises?
Well, the first three picks of the draft went exactly as expected, with Zion Williamson going to the Pelicans, Ja Morant going to the Grizzlies, and RJ Barrett going to the Knicks. Despite being the expected top picks for months, Williamson gave an emotional but down-to-earth interview after being selected, shouting out his mother for pushing him towards success and sharing his thankfulness to be able to play the game he loves as a profession. His interview helped him earn the respect of many NBA fans around the world. Fox Sports 1 analyst Skip Bayless tweeted last night, "Zion is so real, crying now on ESPN as he talks about what his mother sacrificed for him. High character, true franchise cornerstone. I have to say, I agree." Later, Zion said he was surprised he broke down.
"Because I love the game of basketball. You know, you can hear people say things like, oh, that it was likely that I was going to go number one, but I guess you don't know until you actually go through it. And, you know, hearing my name called, I was able to make it on stage without a tear, shake the commissioner's hand. But in the interview, my mom was standing beside me. My emotions just took over."
Although the first three picks went as planned, the rest of the draft was full of surprises. It also had a strong representation from countries outside the United States. RJ Barrett, born in Canada, was the first foreign player drafted.
"What do I say? Like, I'm so overwhelmed, humbled, and just honored and very thankful, you know, that the Knicks took the chance with me, that they believed in me, and I'm so happy to be a Knick, and I can't wait to play in Madison Square Garden."
A few picks later, the Washington Wizards select Rui Hachimura of Gonzaga University with the 9th overall pick, making him the first ever Japanese-born player to be taken in the first round of the NBA draft. The Japanese media was hyped for the occasion. As sports analyst Darren Revelle tweeted the day before the draft, in anticipation of Rui Hachimura's drafting tomorrow, a draft record 46 media members representing 23 outlets from Japan are credentialed for tomorrow night, more than any country outside the U.S. Also of note, Hachimura was born to a Japanese mother and a father from the African nation of Benin. In addition, with the 15th pick, the Detroit Pistons picked Sekou Doumbouya, who was born in Guinea and grew up in France. While the NBA draft is traditionally stocked with players from Eastern European countries, it was a bit of a surprise to see so many players from other nations get taken early. Doumbouya said the African players who came before him inspired his dream.
Siakam, Ibaka, everybody. It's a big inspiration for the African people, African players, and yeah, I'm proud of that.
However, one notable foreign-born player did not fare as well as expected on draft night, and that was Bol Bol. Many thought that Bol Bol, the son of South Sudan legend Manute Bol, would go midway through the first round, but he slid all the way into the mid-second round before being taken by the Denver Nuggets with the 44th overall pick. Concerns about Bol Bol's lanky build, injury history, and even his work ethic may have caused him to slide, but as the Nuggets tweeted, Bol Bol is quite literally a huge addition at 7'2". Bol Bol had some interesting things to say as well. After he received a thunderous applause when his name was called, he said, "I didn't know I had that many fans." And following his draft slide, he said, "I just want to prove everybody wrong." Best of luck to the new Denver Nugget on achieving that goal.
Ryan, thanks for that. Now, beside the players you've already mentioned, who else should NBA fans watch out for in the coming years?
Well, two players I'd keep an eye on are DeAndre Hunter and Dylan Windler. Hunter, the 4th overall pick, will be headed to the Atlanta Hawks. Last season, he led the University of Virginia to an NCAA title. So even though he might not pop off the stat sheet, we know he's a proven winner. Dylan Windler was taken 26th by the Cavaliers, and he's a relative unknown since he played for a small school. That would be Belmont University, which is actually in the same conference as Murray State, the college where Ja Morant attended. Windler is a sharpshooter, and he's capable of going off and taking over any game for the Cavs.
Ryan, that's a great report. I'll be excited to follow these players in the upcoming NBA Summer League. That'll get started in a few weeks as these players go through their preseason workouts, get their contracts worked out, and more. So now for more on the Women's World Cup and some controversy surrounding the way the event's organizers scheduled the final match to be played in Lyon instead of the Stade de France, the national stadium in Paris, we're joined by my VOA colleague, Steve Miller, who reached journalist Catherine Field in Paris. Welcome to the show, Steve.
So, Catherine, what are people saying about the Women's World Cup final not being played in the French National Stadium?
It's just a complete confusion. Why would a tournament that has been hosted by France, that is such a worldwide interest, has generated interest across the globe, why isn't it being held in the national stadium? Now, you can perhaps understand the first match of the tournament being played in the sort of the number two stadium in Paris at Parc des Princes, but to not have any of the matches, and certainly not the final being played in the national stadium, is being seen as somehow someone dropped the ball when they were deciding where these matches were going to be played.
Was there any concern really about getting attendance to fill the stadium because it's women's soccer and not men's soccer?
That seems to have been at the base of it all, and that was a decision taken back in 2014, would you believe, when Paris put forward its bid to be one of the host cities for this World Cup football. They said back in 2014, they really weren't sure that women's football would take off as much as it's done. They weren't really, in fact, confident they could even fill the stud that they'd put aside. You know, let's have a look at it. Parc des Princes can hold about 49,000 spectators. So they weren't really sure back then. But, of course, that's back in 2014. Critics are saying now, hey, you've seen what's happened to women's football since then. You saw it taking off. They even said, listen to this, Steve, back in March, the 7th of March this year, FIFA announced that all tickets to the final were sold out. So they're saying, you had time. You could have put it right. Okay, 2014, you weren't to know, but already 2016, 2017, and early 2019, you saw that there was this fever pitch coming. You should have reacted then.
And not even to, quote-unquote, put it right, as you said, but from a financial standpoint, they had ample time to move the stadium to even increase ticket sales, which would make the match more profitable for the organizers.
Well, absolutely. It seems to be that on the one hand, you've got FIFA, who, let's be honest here, are not very quick at changing their minds on these sorts of things. What FIFA wanted to do by having the finals in the city of Lyon, in the center of France, was to say thank you to Lyon, which has been at the forefront of promoting women's football in France. And in fact, the team, Olympique Lyon, the women's team, have held 7 European titles. And they've held, of course, the last 4, 2016, 17, 18, and 2019. So they were saying, look, we had to go to Lyon because we wanted to thank them because they've really been pushing women's football so much. But again, as you rightly say, they had plenty of time to put it right.
And not only that, if you take a look at the popularity of women's soccer around the globe, even here in the United States, the women draw a far vast more number of people than their male counterpart.
Well, exactly. And if you look at it here in France, you look at who's watching the matches, and here in France we're looking at numbers of around 11 million TV viewers for the French matches. They've broken down the numbers on that and discovered that men under 50 years old account for 54% of the viewers. So no one can say, well, this is only actually women watching women's football. It's right across the board. And when you look at advertisers, who, let's be honest here, you know, it's advertisers that put that money in to get those TV spots. You know, men under 50 are actually some of their target audiences.
Have officials responded to the controversy other than saying, well, we just wanted to play tribute and honor Lyon?
No, they haven't come out and said anything like that at all. They just said, you know, this is how it was, this is what we've done. The only sort of justification we've heard beyond that has been the security measures. They have said, look, you know, France is a country that has seen terrorist attacks in the past. Let's think back to 2016 when they held the European Championships here, and there was a lot of questions about would France be ready with the level of security. This is the other point they say. That was what was decided. The security is the major point. We can't just up and change and go to another stadium overnight because so much security goes into making sure these matches go ahead without any problems at all.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Catherine. That's my VOA colleague, Steve Miller, and as a man under 50, I'm definitely paying attention to this Women's World Cup. We'll be looking forward to the rest of the tournament, and it's a pleasure to be in France watching these matches, according to a Swedish fan who recently was interviewed. She said the atmosphere is just not as rowdy as it can be at men's sporting events.
It's a very friendly, experience, and the happening is very friendly. It's not so aggressive when you have a team when men are playing. Sometimes it can be more violent, but when the women are playing, it's a very nice atmosphere in the arena, and everybody is happy, everybody's joining each other, singing together, having fun together. It doesn't matter which country you come from, everybody's there for having a fun, good time together.
We look forward to more reports from this Women's World Cup as we head into the knockout stage from this weekend onward. And that wraps up the Northern Hemisphere's Southern Summer Solstice edition of the June 21st Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks to Steve Miller. Thanks to Ryan Handel. Thanks to all of our correspondents. Thanks also to VOA engineer Aidan Uko. And thank you for tuning in. Have a great weekend. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Host Carol Castiel sits down with Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, a Democrat who serves on the Homeland Security and Armed Services Committees. Slotkin offers her views on a range of foreign policy and national security issues, including rising tensions between Iran and the United States, the need for election security, and prospects for ending the Afghan war, among other pressing issues. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is Science in a Minute.
A study published in 2016 is currently creating a bit of a buzz on the internet. The study by a pair of researchers from Australia's University of the Sunshine Coast provides evidence that an overuse of cell phones and other handheld devices are causing some young people to develop horn-like bone growths at the back of their skulls. Doctors David Shahar and Mark Sayers analyzed 218 x-rays of people who were between 18 and 30 years old. They say that 41% of them showed a 10 to 30 millimeter bony lump at the base of their skulls. The researchers theorize that moving the head forward to accommodate mobile phone use transfers weight of the head from spinal bones to muscles at the back of the neck and head. It's thought that this added load on the muscles over time can encourage the development of the growths. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Listen to a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the week's headlines, including President Trump officially kicking off his 2020 election campaign and escalating tensions between Iran and the U.S. Join moderator Michael Williams, Tom DeFrank of the National Journal, and Tracy Wilkinson as they discuss these and other issues in the news, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene.